This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. A big welcome to our free speech TV audiences. Today is our debut show on FSTV. It was just about a year since my previous show, Uprising, was on the airwaves, and I'm thrilled to be back. Do tell your friends to tune in every weekday on FSTV at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is available on Dish Network, DirecTV, and in Roku. The Black Lives Matter movement was born here in the United States, where our program is produced, in the wake of Trayvon Martin and Michael Brown's killings. But it is now a global movement, and our neighbors to the north are organizing powerfully under the banner of Black Lives Matter to protest killings of Black Canadians by police. The recent killing of a Somali man named Abdurrahman Abdi by Ottawa police has sparked a demand from activists for justice. BLM chapters all over Canada have held rallies and vigils. Joining me right now is one activist, Cyrus Marcus Ware, is a member of the steering committee of Black Lives Matter Toronto. Welcome to the program, Cyrus.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first tell us about Abdurrahman Abdi. Who was this man and how did his life end at the hands of police?
Abdurrahman Abdi was a 37-year-old Black Somali community member based in Ottawa, and he experienced psychiatric disability. There was a situation in public space in Ottawa where the police were called. They were told that he experienced psychiatric disability, and yet they approached and within, you know, a very short period of time used fatal force, literally taking his life with their bare hands. He was then, the paramedics arrived. He was taken to the hospital in Ottawa, and they actually, the hospital and the paramedics and the police colluded and covered up the time of death. He actually had died before he reached the hospital, but they let everyone think that he was still fighting for his life for about 24 hours. And so it's really just one example of the way that anti-Blackness permeates through the prison industrial complex, and how the police system, the hospitals, and the medical system are really participating together in this system.
Now, here in the United States, I think a lot of us have a romantic notion of Canada as a safer place to be anybody, but even to be Black. How have police targeted Black Canadians, and has the Somali immigrant community in particular been of the focus of police violence?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we do have this fictitious idea of Canada as being this place that never had, for example, never participated in the transatlantic slave trade, which of course is not true. We had slavery here as well. We have this idea of Canada as being this super diverse and very progressive area that, you know, doesn't have issues of systemic racism. But of course, Canada is right next door. We're all part of this North American reality. The transatlantic slave trade affected both places. And we do have very significant issues around anti-Black racism here in Canada, issues that activists have been fighting for justice for more than 50 years, for more than 400 years. And particularly with the Somali community in Ontario, there is an over-policing and a targeted policing of that particular community, but also of Black communities in general. And we've seen this again and again and again. We've seen this in relation to Firas Suleiman in the 90s, Jermaine Carby, Andrew Loku, and now Abdurrahman Abdi.
Now, tell us about the rallies that have been held nationwide across Canada, Canadian cities across the country, having held rallies to demand justice for Abdurrahman Abdi. This is pretty powerful to see it kind of play out across the country.
Yeah, I mean, it was very important to us that we send a message that this was a national outrage, that in fact, people across the country are saying Abdurrahman Abdi's name, they're calling his name, they're saying we want justice, this is unacceptable. You know, to think about the way that the police system works on a federal level, nationally here in Canada, we all in every single city need to be outraged at the way that the police were able to kill this man with their bare hands in broad daylight, in front of his family, in front of his home. This is, it's just stunning, this abuse of power. And so we had solidarity rallies that happened in Vancouver, in Edmonton, in Winnipeg, in Ottawa, in Thunder Bay, in many, many cities across the country where people did banner drops, they did letter writing, they did social media campaigns, they had rallies at the police station in Ottawa, people organizing together to say, this isn't just about one city, this is about a national, issue where we have a problem with our police system. It's not working, it's not making our communities safer and more secure, and time and time again, Black people are dying at the hands of the police in Canada, and in particular, Black disabled people are dying at the hands of the police in Canada. So nationally, we are saying we are outraged and enough.
I understand that Black Lives Matter also has confronted the Special Investigations Unit. Tell us a little bit about the SIU. Our American audience is not familiar with this. Is this meant to be an agency that can hold police accountable?
When the SIU was started about 25 years ago, activists pushed for this civilian oversight of the police. They said the police is not, it's not working to keep our community safer and more secure. So we want civilian oversight. We want accountability. And so the SIU was started under that premise. And of course, what's happened over the 25 years is that it has not manifested in that way. The SIU, there are many ex-police officers who sit on the SIU. We have a situation where we have the police investigating the police, and there are, they never find fault in the actions of the police, of course, because they are investigating themselves. And so we know that the SIU is, there's been review after review after review of the SIU because activists started calling for it to be changed and reformed. And we know that the reviews are not working. We are calling for a disbanding of the SIU. We need something different that will actually deal with police accountability and that will actually ensure that we have safety and self-determination for all people. So we actually went to the SIU in Mississauga. We gathered there. We shut down the SIU for the day to say there will be no business as usual today. And also there will be no business as usual going forward. We know where they are and we are calling for changes. We are calling for something different.
And this, of course, is so reminiscent for us here in the United States. My program is produced in Los Angeles, where the Los Angeles Police Commission has a similar role and sadly a similar problem with investigating police. It's often influenced by police themselves, and our Black Lives Matter Los Angeles chapter has been camping out in front of City Hall for going on well over a month now, demanding the mayor fire the police chief here in LA. It is certainly a global movement. Now, the last time we had checked in with Black Lives Matter Toronto was in late March, when BLM had been occupying police headquarters in Toronto. What forms does the organizing take? Are there any occupations happening now?
Well, we did a day-long occupation of the SIU, right. On Wednesday. And I think that one of the things that, we're trying to do with this movement building is that activism needs to take different forms depending on what, the particular issue is and how we're sort of addressing it. So we have a lot of art-based activism. There was amazing artists who came through, musicians and performers who performed at the rally in front of the SIU. There were visual artists like Janine Carrington who did beautiful drawings at we had a children's zone that they could do coloring, these beautiful signs that said Black Muslim Lives Matter, Black Somali Lives Matter. We do chanting, we do press releases. We had a press conference in the middle of Yonge and Dundas Square just the week before to draw attention to Abdirahman Abdi's case and to make it known that we were calling for changes at the SIU. So we do a lot of different kinds of movement building, and the sort of format that it takes, depends on the specific issue.
What is the sort of solidarity between Black Canadians and the Somali community been like? People who lived in Canada all their lives versus new immigrants from countries like Somalia. As is the case here in the U.S., the Black community is extremely diverse. Many sections are immigrant. And in Canada, has there been an easy sort of joining of forces, or has it taken some work to do outreach within the community and kind of building of relations?
Well, I mean, in Canada, we have, I mean, we have a very diverse set of Black communities as well. And I'll say Black communities. And I mean, we are such a spread out nation. So there are so many different ways that Blackness manifests across the country, and it looks different in every place. And absolutely, there are people who have been, you know, whose families have been here for 400 years, and there are people whose families have been here for 400 days. And what we are seeing absolutely is a solidarity where people are coming together to specifically, you know, call out some of the ways that that some people in the Black community are more marginalized than others, and to really address that more broadly.
I understand that Black Lives Matter has released a list of demands specifically around the case of Abdurrahman Abdi, and it's a detailed list. Can you sort of summarize it for us? What would you really like to see happen with regard to this specific case?
Well, first of all, we want some specific things to happen in relation to Ottawa. So we want to actually have charges laid against the Ottawa police officers, David Ware and Daniel Montesson. We want a public release of the full Special Investigations Unit report into the killing of Abdurrahman Abdi. We want the collection of and release of race-based data by the Special Investigations Unit. We want the Attorney General to mandate implementation of the recommendations of the Iobucci report that specifically is around the way that the police interact with people in crisis and people with who are labeled or perceived to have psychiatric disabilities. We want an investigation by the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care into specifically what happened at the hospital. We want an investigation into the extent in which the Ottawa Hospital and the Ottawa paramedics colluded with the Ottawa police to withhold information from the family about Abdurrahman Abdi and to mislead the public about his time of death. We want the Ontario College of Physicians and Surgeons to strip the licenses of the healthcare practitioners who authorized the withholding of the information around Abdurrahman Abdi's death. And we want the Ottawa Hospital to confirm that they will end the practices of collaborating with the police and the Special Investigations Unit to withhold information from the public. And lastly, we're very interested and very concerned about making sure that there is counseling and support services, both formal and community-based, for family and community members who witnessed and were impacted by the death and killing of Abdurrahman Abdi.
Now, Cyrus, here in the U.S., it feels like not a week passes when a person of color, often, most often, a Black American is killed by police or even just shot at by police. Do you have any sense of the statistics in Canada for police violence against Black lives?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, we don't collect a lot of race-based data. That's one of the things that we are really hoping will change. That's one of the things that we're calling for. But we do know anecdotally that we also have, you know, very, very, very frequently these stories of police encounters that have gone terribly, terribly wrong that particularly target Black and disabled people. And, you know, I'm not sure if I could say that it's every day, but it's frequent enough that it feels that our work is never done. It's frequent enough that it feels like we're doing rally after rally after rally after rally just because there is so much that has happened in the last year. I mean, when we look at the death of Andrew Loku and we look at the occupation of Tent City, and then we, you know, then we look at some of the things that happened in Ottawa very recently, like there's a chain of reaction that's happening. And I think that one of the things that really stands out is that, of course, this is because the police system is designed to do this. It's designed, actually, it's working exactly the way that it's intended. It's designed to disenfranchise people of color. It's designed to eradicate and kill through a genocide Indigenous and Black people. And so we're seeing that. And so although we don't have you know, the statistical data, because that race-based data isn't currently being collected, anecdotally, we know what's happening.
Now, certainly the police don't seem to, and authorities protecting the police don't seem to be taking the right approach. But what about sentiments across Canada from non-Black Canadians? Is there a widespread understanding that this notion of speaking the words Black Lives Matter is an important thing to say? Or are people resisting that, taking it in the wrong way, becoming defensive about it, and chanting things like All Lives Matter in response?
We actually have, you know, been organizing together for 2 years, and it was really only just this past June that we had an All Lives Matter chanter, you know, chanting back to
Wow.
us at a rally. And I think that that says a couple of things. In part, I think that there is definitely a profound understanding that there is a specific issue around anti-blackness in Canada amongst some community members. But also, I think that what we see is that there are these particular pockets where anti-black racism has been allowed to really mushroom, and I think that we saw that in some of the demonstrations that we had around Pride, and that's where we heard for the first time, you know, all lives matter, all lives matter. And I think that, you know, there's just perhaps a real lack of understanding of what those words actually mean, because of course we are also saying all lives matter, obviously.
Right.
If black lives matter, everyone's life matters,
right?
Because of course this is like Patricia, Patricia Hill Collins, and this idea of intersectionality, and the idea, you know, the Combahee River Collective, who did this groundbreaking feminist black radical thought making, you know, in the late 1970s and early 1980s, and they said that if we can make things safer and safest for black women and for black people, then in fact, because being the most marginalized, you are actually making things safer for everybody.
Right.
So everybody gets more access if things are accessible to black people. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're saying. And so it's very interesting to see that over the last 2 years, we've actually had quite a lot of support of people coming out and saying, yes, in fact, Black Lives Matter, we are with you. And we saw this with Tent City, we saw this. And then, of course, we've just recently started hearing the opposite.
Right. And in fact, tell us about the Pride Parade, where Black Lives Matter Toronto was an honored group.
Yes, we were an honored group. We led the Pride Parade. And when we got to Yonge in college, we decided to stop. And we decided to address the organization, Pride Toronto itself, because that organization has a history of anti-black racism. And there were some particular things that have happened over the last 10 years with the way that it has interacted with a black, queer, and trans group, Blackness Yes, that puts on the largest and longest running stage at Pride, Blockarama, and also this group called Black Queer Youth, which runs a stage for black, queer, and trans youth. There had been some particular things that had happened, then the Black Queer Youth stage losing its funding, Blockarama sort of being in a bit of a limbo, and also this proliferation of the inclusion of police forces, of prison guards unions, and of law enforcement vehicles in the parade. So for those three things, we wrote a list of demands that covered those three sort of overarching problems. And we stopped the parade at Yonge and College, which is about 3/4 of the way through the march for our Pride Parade. And we said, we're going to stop here. These are our list of demands. These are the things that need to change. Not because this is a big, a dramatic moment just to get attention for us, but because we need to stop. This is not business as usual. Black, queer, and trans people are dying. Black trans women are dying. They're dying here in Canada. They're dying in the United States. And we need this organization to do better, to be better. It is the organization that is the pride, that celebrates pride and sets certain agendas around LGBTQ activism in one of the largest cities in Canada. You need to take responsibility. You need to be fighting for black, queer, and trans people, because if you're not, who will?
Right. And we had some of the same problems at some of the pride parades in big cities in the U.S., particularly with police presence and some of these issues. Well, finally, Cyrus, the Movement for Black Lives here in the U.S. released a lengthy and very powerful platform with policy demands, many of them specific to the U.S., but you had earlier recounted demands specific to the Abdulrahman Abdi case, but is there a similar grand plan that Black Lives Matter chapters across Canada have crafted together to say, overall, this is our vision for BLM Canada?
Well, we absolutely support the demands that were and the vision that was sort of set out in the States. And yeah, as Canada, we're organizing and we're getting all of the cities together. And this is what we saw on Wednesday when we had the National Day of Action, because there are specific unique things about what it is to be black here in Canada. There are specific things that we need to articulate that may be slightly different from those in the States or from other places where blackness, where Black Lives Matter and blackness is being discussed. discuss. So that's something that we're working on.
Well, Cyrus Marcus Ware, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to you. And thanks so much for being on our program.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And Black Lives Matter.
Cyrus Marcus Ware is a member of the Steering Committee of Black Lives Matter Toronto. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.